The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Gladwell. Before we get started, we'd like to extend our thoughts and prayers to Coach Mike Leach and his family. Now let's jump into Triple A. The first story we have today is the New Orleans Saints coaches and Cameron Jordan were fined over $500K by the NFL for faking an injury during the team's loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last Monday. Nathan, you're the resident Saints fan here, so what do you think about the NFL fining the Saints over this?
So I was watching this game, of course, as a regular Saints fan would on Monday night. Of course, we took the lead away and stuff like that. But to see, like, us faking injuries, of course, I never want to see that in football. I know it's been a big deal in college football, and I really haven't seen it done in the NFL all that much. But to know that we were doing it kind of disgusts me as a fan, and I don't want to see it happen again. Gray, I know that you see it a lot with college football too, and I feel like you had the same thoughts on the situation as me, but I'm going to go ahead and let you say your thoughts on it.
Yeah, just like you said, Nathan, it kind of disgusts me. I don't think that should be any part of the game. I don't think, obviously in the NFL, they can find players and coaches like this. In college, you see it a lot more. But in college, you see it to slow down momentum. In this game, it kind of, the Saints kind of used it, or seemed like they used it for more as like a timeout, as an extra timeout, as Tom Brady was about to go for it on fourth down. But I don't like it. In college football, it needs to be a penalty. But in the NFL, it should never happen in pro football, especially with the guys that, a guy like Cameron Jordan, like that's ridiculous.
Yeah, just to play devil's advocate here, the New Orleans Saints did say he suffered an acute mid-foot sprain in his left foot, and he's been at the facility each day receiving treatment for the injury he suffered. So, you know, maybe it was an actual injury. We really don't know. If they have the files and all that, I believe they're going to get their appeal on this fine. Mm. All right, last week, the United States swapped notorious Russian arms dealer Victor Bout, a.k.a. the Merchant of Death, in a prisoner exchange for WNBA star Brittany Griner. What do y'all think about the U.S. making this swap?
I don't even know. Like, yes, Griner is a U.S. citizen who needed to come home from being in such a horrible place like Russia. But it seems like we got a little bit on the bad end of this deal. We got a professional basketball player, and Russia got the Merchant of Death back, who was accused of trying to kill Americans, and a arms dealer. That's not a very good trade, but I do agree Griner does deserve to be back on U.S. soil, and happy she is back. But not bringing former Marine Paul Whelan, that's a little ridiculous. Biden going and getting, and the U.S. administration going and getting Griner just because of the media outbreak, and having to give up the Merchant of Death for it, and not getting Whelan, it seems a little bit on the pansy end for me.
So obviously I see two different sides of the situation. Obviously, yep, as Gray mentioned, she's a U.S. citizen, and of course we want to have all U.S. citizens brought back. But on the other side, you're giving Russia what they want in a arms dealer and someone who basically has major influence in their country. Let's not forget, Brittany Griner committed a crime. She should have known better not to bring substance over to a foreign country, especially Russia, with how strict their laws are there. But yeah, like what you said, where there were more people deserving of coming home than Brittany Griner. But it all goes back to it being more of a publicity stunt than anything else. for Joe Biden and this cabinet, which it really sickens me, to be honest. And it's really saddening to hear that there are still people over there that won't come back because they don't have as much of a name in the media.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in the words of Peter Ducey, in this prisoner swap, why did Russia get such a better deal? And, you know, the White House press secretary responded by saying it was either Brittany or no one at all. And I don't want to be negative, but if we're giving up the Merchant of Death, and we only get Brittany Griner, we just don't need to give up anybody at all.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a terrible trade. We should have had the upper hand in that trade considering we had the Merchant of Death. Obviously we didn't. We kind of just conceded to that. And this administration, this media administration need to really step up and put a light on Paul Whelan, who is still over there being in the Russian jails. All right, Nathan, what do you got for us in college football this week?
Let's go ahead and lighten things up a little bit with our game. I think it was like one of the only games, actually. Army versus Navy. Army won 20-17 in double overtime. Not a lot of passing, of course. These teams hardly ever pass. So, but running the ball, Army had 48 carries, 125 yards and touchdown. Navy had 57 carries, 259 yards rushing and a touchdown. But Army ended up pulling it out. And then right after, Navy went and fired their head coach, who's been there 15 seasons, which is kind of crazy for me to hear about. Gray, what do you think about this situation with Navy?
Look, first of all, talk about this game. It's always a fun game to watch, Army versus Navy. It was 3-0, then 7-3, and then 10-10 going into overtime, and then both teams scored on the first play of overtime. It looks like they just met at overtime, decided, hey, let's do a shootout, actually, instead of this Army-Navy stuff. But it's always a fun game to watch. But with Navy, firing head coach Ken Niumatalolo was a little odd to me. And the report said they parted ways, and it may have been more of a mutual thing than what was reported. But I think it's interesting. Obviously, the direction of the naval forces and their football team is not like high priority for that academy. But it looks like they're going to be looking to get better and better and go hire a new coach and find a new guy to lead their program.
Yeah, in this game, there's a lot of running, not a lot of passing. That's really all I got for that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see more passing than running, but, that's just modern college football. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our college football award winners. For starting us off here with the Heisman, Caleb Williams ended up winning. Terrific year. Of course, the other finalists, Max Duggan, TCU, C.J. Stroud, Ohio State, and Stetson Bennett at Georgia. Do you think Caleb Williams was worthy of winning this award at the end of the year, Gray?
Yes, I think they got it right. I think the Heisman in general has completely lost its tradition and lost its, I didn't watch the ceremony. Like I always loved, you watch Army Navy this Saturday and then you watch the Heisman ceremony. It's just what you do as a college football fan. And it's just not the same anymore. The actual trophy, like the physical Heisman Trophy, has a running back on it, and there are four quarterbacks in this award. It's just not the same anymore, especially after Blake Corum and Hendon Hooker didn't get invited, and Stetson Bennett does. It's turning into a popularity contest, but Caleb Williams did deserve it. I think he was the best player, and I'm happy he won the Heisman.
Alex, what are your thoughts on him winning the award?
This year there really wasn't that person that really separated themselves from the pack. But if you were to pick somebody, it would have been Caleb Williams. Max Duggan was really close. I think if he would have pulled it out against Kansas State, he would have won the award, but he obviously didn't. So I think Caleb Williams was deserving of this.
Yeah, I mean, what Gray was talking about being more of a popularity vote, it's basically turned into the NFL MVP at this point, where we're just seeing quarterbacks every year. And it's really sad to see people like Bijan Robinson and Blake Corum, not be able to be invited to New York just because of the position they play. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on. Our Maxwell Award winner, most outstanding player, went to Caleb Williams as well. And the Walker Camp Award Player of the Year also went to Caleb Williams. I don't think that was very surprising, as you know, he won the Heisman too, so that was pretty consistent. But we'll go ahead and move on to our Coach of the Year, which was Sonny Dykes from TCU. Alex, I know you're probably happy with what he's done at TCU. And of course, I think he's very worthy of winning this award. What are your thoughts on his season as a whole at TCU?
Maybe at the beginning of the year, nobody would have thought TCU would have been in the college football playoff. And being a first-year coach and to get him to that point takes a lot of hard work and effort from him and the coaching staff as a whole. So it's very inspiring to see what he could do in just 1 year at TCU.
Gray, I know you've been watching TCU very closely and seeing what, you know, this person like Max Duggan and what TCU's offense has been able to do. How does Sonny Dykes have so much influence on what they do as a whole?
Yeah, just like Alex said, it's astonishing what Sonny Dykes and his staff has been able to do as a first-year head coach and staff at a team like TCU. They've completely revolutionized that offense and that program. You know, just like you said, Nathan, them getting – nobody would have thought we'd be seeing TCU as the 3 seed in the college football playoff at the end of the year. So Sonny Dykes is completely deserving of this Coach of the Year award. If anybody's ever deserved an award more this award this year, definitely Sonny Dykes.
Yeah, I don't really think anyone else was close. Maybe Lincoln Riley, but of course – he had that huge letdown versus Utah twice. So, yeah, Sonny Dykes is very worthy of winning this award at the end of the year. All right, let's go ahead and move on to the Lombardi Award, Nation's Top Player, which ended up being Will Anderson. He had a kind of terrific year, even though it kind of went under the radar. Definitely not as good as what he did last year, but still very, very good. Gray, what did you see from Will Anderson to make him the top player this year?
Yeah, just like you said, his sophomore year was more of a dominant performance in terms of statistical and just overall, you know, award-winning type of year. But that doesn't take away the fact that Will Anderson still had a fantastic year this year and is going to be a very talented player in this upcoming draft. Had 10 sacks, had 17 tackles for loss, had a pick six, was on one of the better teams this year in Alabama. So I think among some of the other finalists like Brock Bowers and Jalen Carter at Georgia, I think it's a good win that time for Will Anderson.
Yeah, I mean, throughout the year, Will Anderson was just a game wrecker. Even though he didn't have the stats like he did last year, I mean, he was affecting the game in other ways by forcing these double teams and triple teams by these offensive lines. So a great year for Will Anderson, and I really think he's deserving of this award.
Yeah, he did a terrific job this season, and I definitely think he deserved more credit than what he got for what he did. Of course, he ended up winning both the Defensive Player of the Year awards as well. All right, our Davey O'Brien Award winner was Max Duggan, which kind of switches it up since Caleb Williams was, you know, winning some of the top awards. Alex, I know Max Duggan had a terrific season. Go ahead and talk about what he did to, you know, carry TCU to this college football playoff berth.
Yeah, like you said, Nathan, I mean, he really did carry this TCU team to the college football playoff. For a large majority of the year, his best receiver, Quentin Johnson, was injured, suffering ankle injuries. So he had to put this team on his back, and he definitely did, having 21 passing yards, 30 touchdowns, and only 4 interceptions, and having 404 rushing yards and 6 touchdowns. And, you know, this coaching staff really called upon Max Duggan to lead this team, and he definitely did that. I believe at the beginning of the year, he had to have open heart surgery, and he came back very soon and was able to do this season. So very inspiring to see what he was able to do on this TCU team.
Gray, do you think that he should have won this award over Caleb Williams?
Yes, absolutely. We see that a lot, and we've seen that in the past with If there's multiple quarterbacks lined up or multiple running backs lined up for the Heisman, the one that wins the Heisman isn't going to win the Davey O'Brien or the Doak Walker or the, we see them spread that out in the past. And I think it's the perfect way to do that here with Caleb Williams winning the Heisman and then winning the, player of the year awards. But Max Duggan winning the Davey O'Brien, which is the best quarterback award. And just like Alex said, truly inspiring what he did this year under first year head coach Sonny Dykes, bringing TCU to the third seed in the college football playoff, almost should have won the Big 12. Just a few yards short of winning the Big 12. They're unbelievable this year. He was unbelievable. He's completely deserving for that award.
Yeah, he did a terrific job this season. I think Caleb Williams was definitely worthy of winning this award too. But of course, Max Duggan carrying his team meant a lot more than what Caleb Williams did. All right, our Doak Walker Award winner, the nation's top running back, went to Bijan Robinson. I don't think this was very surprising, as he did what he usually does and carried Texas on the offensive end. I think that another person who really should have won this award was Blake Corum at Michigan. He had a terrific year. I think really his injury at the end of the season really stopped him from winning this award.
Yeah.
Gray, Alex, I know that Texas didn't really have a great year, but we know what Bijan Robinson is capable of, and of course, what he did this season. Do you think he was worthy of winning this award over Blake Corum?
That's a close one. I think, just like you said, Nathan, I think without Corum's injury late in the year, and if he were to play in that dominating win over Ohio State, I think he does win this award and is invited to the Heisman. So I think Corum should have won the award in general, but Bijan Robinson is deserving of this award. He is fantastic. He's one of the best one-cut running backs I've seen in a long time. His ability to make that one cut and change direction so quickly and so efficiently, it's very, very impressive. Just like you said, Nathan, Texas didn't have a great year, but Bijan Robinson did.
Yeah, one person that was kind of angry that didn't get invited was UAB running back Dwayne McBride. He led the college football in rushing with 1,713 yards and was second in rushing touchdowns with 19, and he had 7.4 yards per carry, all that being better than Bijan Robinson. I thought he should have maybe won the award, but I guess being at UAB didn't get the recognition he deserved.
That's definitely a good point. Some of these smaller schools kind of get overlooked, maybe because of the competition they play or just because they don't have as much money as some of these bigger universities.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and move on to our Blitnikoff Award winner for most outstanding receiver, which went to Jalin Hyatt at Tennessee. I didn't think this was surprising at all. Of course, Marvin Harrison Jr. at Ohio State put up terrific numbers this year, but I definitely think that Jalin Hyatt was more deserving of this award. Greg, what do you think?
Yeah, no, Jalin Hyatt, all you got to do is show me that Alabama game, and he was sold. He won that award right at about halftime of that game. His six catches for 200-plus yards and five touchdowns won him that award. But, again, Marvin Harrison Jr. did have a great year. Looking forward to seeing him against, like, Keely Ringo and that Georgia defense in the college football playoff. But this award definitely deserves to go to Jalin Hyatt.
For sure, Jalin Hyatt really did deserve this award. I think Marvin Harrison, I think he might have had a chance, but I really think Jalin Hyatt kind of ran away with it, like he said, in the Alabama game.
Yeah, it's hard to look back on that game and see what he did. All right, the John Mackey Award winner for the most outstanding tight end went to Brock Bowers at Georgia, and it was not close. I don't even think we need to talk about this award, really.
Yeah, no.
yeah, so we got some terrific award winners, and really, I don't think there's a lot of other competition outside of a few other guys. Is it? Like quarterback wise, but I definitely think that people got it right for the most part with this award season.
For sure.
I would agree.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to some basketball, shall we?
Yes, sir. So both one game for both Auburn and Alabama this past week. due to it being finals week and there being no midweek games. They both played on Saturday. Let's talk about Alabama. Alabama going to the number one team in the country, the Houston Cougars, getting down early, but coming back and winning by a score of 71-65. Some key stats from the game. Noah Clowney, the freshman, looked absolutely fantastic. Had 16 points and 11 rebounds. And Brandon Miller was pretty much a no-show. Overall, it was 0 of 8 from the field, so 8 points all from the free throw line, but did not see him have the kind of game that he's used to having, but had some really good bench production as well. Mark Sears had 11 points, and then Jaden Bradley looked fantastic. Another freshman, 12 points off the bench. And then for the Houston Cougars, Jamal Shedd was outstanding. He had 19 points. But Neamari Brunette holding Marcus Sasser to 2 of 11 from the field and only 9 points was the reason Alabama won this game. Nathan, I know you watched this game in kind of a frenzy because how this game went. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I get a little out of control every now and then watching Alabama basketball.
Just a little.
I mean, just a little bit. Get back to that North Carolina game. I was all over the place until we won. And definitely in this game where, you know, coming out of half, we looked like we were lost. And Houston, of course, looked like they were going to run away with it. But we slowly started chipping away at that 15-point deficit. And, you know, it wasn't the usual people. You had Jaden Bradley really taking over and running the offense, of course. Brandon Miller just couldn't figure out a rhythm. They really shut him down, 0 of 8 from the field, and only scoring from the free throw line, which is really crazy to see that on a stat sheet. But you had people like Noah Clowney who make a huge defensive impact. Of course, he had a double-double, 16 points, 11 rebounds. And you have, of course, Neamari Brunette, where he really locked up Marcus Sasser the whole game and held on to 9 points, like you mentioned. So there are key components of Alabama to where their depth really shines late in games, and they help you win these huge games against teams like Houston. And it is very hard to go on the road to play a team like Houston where they really don't lose much at that home arena.
Yeah, I mean, one person I like to point out was Javon Plainly. He was entirely ineffective for this game. It felt like when he came into it, the offense was very stagnant. It felt like there was a lot of isolation, AAU ball. But when Jaden Bradley led the offense, it was more there's more flow to it. Got really going in the second half. Alabama ended up being down 15 points. But Nate Oates really showed the confidence in the freshman, playing 3-4 for the almost majority of that second half, leading them to a comeback. And like y'all said, Neamari Brunette's defense on Marcus Sasser was one of the best defensive performances that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, the main difference in this game was before, in the first half, Alabama had 12 turnovers. In the second half, they only had 3. That is the key difference right there.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So Alabama moves up to number 4 in the latest AP poll, only behind Purdue at number 1, Virginia at number 2, and UConn at number 3. Alabama's only loss right there. What kind of future are we setting up, especially getting ready to go into SEC play very soon after Christmas? What are we setting up here for the Alabama Crimson Tide?
You know, Greg, I don't like to get into all of that, especially because last year we were all the way up to 6, and then we decided to fall apart. So let's just keep playing the games in front of us and take care of our opponents, and we'll worry about seeding and rankings when it comes to March Madness.
One game at a time.
I like it. So moving on to the Auburn Tigers. Auburn suffers their first loss of the year to the Memphis Tigers in Atlanta on Saturday by a score of 82-73. Memphis made a run late in the first half, and it just looked like right when they made that little run, it was a little 8-0 run. The game was over from then on. And from then on, it was pretty much even back and forth. But Auburn continues to struggle offensively, you know, has flashes, especially when at home, of shooting very well from the outside. But when going away from Neville Arena, shooting very poorly, and it's becoming a massive, massive problem. 6 of 24 from 3, 25% is just not – you're just not going to win games against a team like Memphis, who's very well coached, very well balanced, very experienced, and has a bunch of seniors on that team. Kendrick Davis was outstanding in this game. He had 27 points and 9 rebounds. And DeAndre Williams was also really good, 16 points, 11 rebounds. Again, both fifth-year seniors, both guys that have been there or been playing basketball for a long time. DeAndre Williams is 26 years old. Like, this Memphis team is built for March, and Auburn is not right now. And Auburn got punched in the mouth. They got out-coached. They got out-game-planned, out-hustled, massively out-rebounded. Jani Broome and Dylan Cardwell and Jalen Williams and Johan Trehor have got to rebound the ball better, especially against teams that are older, bigger, and stronger than them, like Memphis. So I think this is a Auburn loss that needed to happen. There's not things in this game that Bruce Pearl and his staff can't go back to the practice court or to the film room and fix, which is a good thing because there's a lot of teams that are losing right now that does not look fixable. But this Auburn team just has to find a rhythm offensively. And once they do, they'll be fine. But Memphis looked absolutely outstanding in this game. What did y'all see?
You really took a page out of my book there. Needs to find some chemistry. But it's really one of those things where you can't really, you know, use your finger and point at someone and put the blame all on them, because really it's a team effort overall, and the whole team shot poorly. And we know that to be true from the past few games we've seen from this Auburn team. And really the main difference was the physicality of this Memphis team to go and get those rebounds and, you know, really get those second chances to where they can score more points. And Auburn just got to do a better job of boxing people out and getting those boards, because, I mean, those are whole possessions you're giving away when you don't get those rebounds.
Yeah, I can say it to him blue in the face. Auburn needs the number one option they can go to in crunch time and just rely on him consistently. And throughout the year, I have not seen it. Wendell Green has showed flashes, but he hasn't been consistent at it. Just really need to see one of these guys step up and show they are the alpha dog.
Yeah, well, I was talking on my podcast earlier with my dad on the Jungle Show. I was saying, just like you said, Alex, Auburn does not have that guy that we can throw the ball to and say, hey, we need a bucket. Go get that bucket right now on this possession. We've got to have it. Last year was a no-brainer. You threw the ball to number 10, and he went and scored. But this year, we don't have that yet, nor do we have the set to get anybody that shot, because we don't know who that guy is. So, yeah, just like you said, Alex, we need that guy. We need somebody to step up, whether it is Wendell Green, whether it's Jalen Williams, Alan Flanagan, I don't know. But somebody's got to step up. So moving on to our game of the week was the number 10 Arizona Wildcats and the number 14 Indiana Hoosiers. Arizona ended up winning this one big by 14, 89 to 75. Some key stats. Indiana, Trace Jackson Davis did not have an overall great game. He fouled out in the game, had 11 points and 5 rebounds. But Arizona looks like they are one of the top teams in the country, showing that Utah loss is – looks like a fluke from what we see from this Arizona team now. What did you see in this? What did y'all see in this game that proves that Arizona could be one of the top teams coming up this year?
Well, I think, you know, you look back at last year and what they were able to do, and they're having similar success this year, excluding that Utah game. So I think it really goes back to the coaching staff and how they're able to game plan for certain teams. And of course, you know, they take care of business shooting wise, and they found who can shoot, who can score. I mean, they had how many 4 people in double digit points. So they have a recipe for success there, Arizona.
Yeah, they have probably one of the best front courts in the country with those two guys. But also like to point out, Indiana got in foul trouble early with Xavier Johnson leaving with 2 fouls, and they ended up having to trail by 17 in the first half. But they ended up cutting it to 5 or 6 multiple times. But the officiating in this game is very questionable. There was a couple of missed charges and a badly missed goaltend. It kind of ended up favoring Arizona. Indiana is known to be a really physical defensive team, kind of like Houston was against Alabama. But the officiating was very questionable throughout the game.
Yeah, no doubt. I agree. So some other big games that happened this past week. Number 17, Illinois beat the number 2, Texas Longhorns, 85-78 in overtime. Wisconsin beat number 13, Maryland, 64-59. Tennessee also beat Maryland, 56-53. Gonzaga beat Washington, 77-60. Ohio State beat Rutgers 67-66 on a buzzer beater by Tanner Holden. Arkansas beat Oklahoma by 10, 88-78. Purdue beat Nebraska in overtime 65-62. And Kansas absolutely blew out Missouri in that very hostile environment in Columbia, Missouri, 95-67. Are there any other games that sticked out to y'all this week besides Auburn, Alabama, and our game of the week?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and highlight Tennessee here. I know I don't usually do this, but beating number 13 Maryland, I know it was a close game, but they have some huge wins, especially, you know, the one over Kansas. So you look at teams like Tennessee, teams like Arkansas, and of course Alabama, and this SEC is really, really loaded, and it's going to be a tough SEC schedule moving forward.
The one game that really I looked at was number 17 Illinois beating number 2 Texas. That was a really close game throughout. Then Illinois ended up losing to Penn State later in the week. So I'm not really sure what to think about this Illinois team. You beat the number 2 team in the country, but then you lose an unranked Penn State.
Yeah, I agree. So, Alex, what do we have from NFL this past weekend?
Yeah, so our game of the week was Vikings versus Lions. The Lions ended up winning 34-23. Justin Jefferson set a franchise record with 223 receiving yards. That's largely in part to the fact that the Vikings defense couldn't stop Jared Goff and the Lions offense. So the Vikings were having to play from behind for a majority of it. I can't put the blame on Kirk Cousins. He was 31-41, 425 yards and 2 touchdowns. And no interceptions. So what did y'all see from this Vikings team and this Lions team to show that they're maybe ready to contend for a playoff run?
Yeah, well, the Vikings, Justin Jefferson is proving that he's one of, if not the best wide receiver in the NFL right now. He's continuing to do that, but the Vikings offense played outstanding. Just like you said, Alex, Kirk Cousins, 425 passing yards, 223 of those to Jefferson. Hockenson had a good game going back to Detroit. Adam Thielen had a really good game. KJ Osborne getting in the, but they could not stop Jared Goff and the Lions offense in at all. And if the Lions are able to play offensively like they did in this game, that we could be seeing them, you know, maybe not this year because it might be a little too late this year for them, but next year putting that offense together around Goff and DeAndre Swift, Jamal Williams, DJ Chark, Amon-Ra St. Brown play really well. And then just now getting Jameson Williams back with his first catch being a 41-yard touchdown. That's really, really impressive. What did you see, Nathan?
Yeah, to start off with the Vikings, of course, you know, Kirk Cousins had a great game. And you can go and pick out all these different playmakers that had great games. But at the end of the day, they could not stop Detroit's offense, and someone like Jared Goff, who has been known to be inconsistent in the past, has really proven that he can still find people and, you know, make plays. So I think as far as playoffs go, I don't think that the Lions can make it, but it's been all about injuries for them. So they're very healthy next year, that I can see them making the playoffs.
It'd be interesting to see if they stick with Goff or they draft somebody like Bryce Young or CJ Stroud with their pick being the one they acquired in the Matt Stafford trade from the Rams. All right. So, Nathan, what do you got for college football bowl games for this upcoming weekend?
Oh, yeah. We got a long list. So, let's go ahead and jump right into it. Starting off Friday, December 16th, you have UAB versus Miami, Ohio in the Bahamas Bowl, number 25 UTSA versus number 24 Troy in the Cure Bowl. Let me move on to Saturday, December 17th. Got a whole list of games here. Cincinnati playing Louisville in the Fenway Bowl. SMU playing BYU in the New Mexico Bowl. Washington State playing Fresno State in the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl. That's a very interesting bowl right there. Rice playing Southern Miss in the Lending Tree Bowl. Florida playing number 14 Oregon State in the Las Vegas Bowl. North Texas playing Boise State in the Frisco Bowl. So that really starts us off this week. I know that's a lot of games. Some of those aren't really
that interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, you only have a few matchups there that might get a little interesting. So we'll see.
I agree. What do you got for college basketball this upcoming week?
So for the number four Alabama Crimson Tide, they play Memphis on Tuesday. Team has already run through part of the SEC, being Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, and Auburn. They've got Alabama and Texas A&M this upcoming week. Be interesting to see that game. And then they have Gonzaga on Saturday in Birmingham, the rematch from last year's Gonzaga game up in Seattle. And then for the number 19 Auburn Tigers, they get a home tune-up game on Wednesday against Georgia State, and then they go out west. Their first game out west is Sunday against USC, and then they'll play Washington next week in the midweek up all the way up in Seattle. And then our game of the week is the number 5 Houston Cougars trying to bounce back after that Alabama loss versus the number 2 Virginia Cavaliers on Saturday, December 17th. They'll be a very, very defensive led game. Goodness gracious. What we got for the NFL this upcoming weekend, Alex?
Yeah, so we got the Dolphins, Bills, the Falcons, Saints. Very important game for that division that's very terrible. Lions versus Jets, Cowboys versus Jaguars, Patriots versus Raiders, Titans versus Chargers, Bengals versus Buccaneers, and our game of the week, Giants versus Commanders.
Yeah, I might have to change that after what the Giants said this weekend. I don't know if I really want to talk about game of the week with the Giants again.
Yeah.
All right. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.